Welcome to House of Comics. I'm Charlotte Henry, and I'm snuggled under a blanket with my co-host Emma Bunnell because we're both very cold. How are you?
Cold.
Cold. I'll see you in HR after that intro. But we're here because it's a hell of a week, one way or the other. I think we were going to start with the row on Rwanda, but I think we need to start just on pure chronology with what happened with a major poll.
Well, I think that, to be fair, that's absolutely part of the row on Rwanda.
Well, it is, and we'll get to that, because you're absolutely right. There's a whole lot that one thing inevitably feeds into other. So let's...
It was commissioned on the day of the second reading.
It was commissioned on the day of the second... Well, published, yeah.
No, commissioned on the day,
and published at the start of this week when the third reading and the committee stage was happening, and the and the rows were happening. So let's go through. It was a new gov, what they call an MRP model. I'm not even going to pretend to understand what that really means or explain it, but it's a much more in-depth poll than we might normally get, is how I understand it. It looks really into constituency by constituency as opposed to a national average, is what I took away from all the explanations.
Yes. MRP is like they do a big, giant part. So it's 14,000 people.
Yes.
And then they look at how that would work out, looking at each seat in terms of the demographics, voting histories, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. Yes, you're right. It was 14,110, if you want to know exactly how many people responded. It was commissioned by an organisation called the Conservative Britain Alliance. Nope. No idea either. And it went into...
And apparently, if you Google that, the only reference to it is this poll.
Mm-hmm. And it was went to the Daily Telegraph. I'm telling you all that for reasons that will become apparent in a minute. Now, the top line is Keir Starmer would be sitting on a 120-seat majority. That is the headline of the YouGov's own article. And it says that the Conservatives would go down to just 169 seats. That would be a loss of 196 compared to what they got in 2019, which is staggering. Now, obviously, people are comparing this to 1997 and the Tony Blair-inspired wipeout. The Conservatives only got 165 seats then. Similar to 1997 as well, the Lib Dems would get 48 seats per this poll. I think fascinating, actually, and we could probably do a whole show on this, but we'll resist with our London accents, is the SNP would slump to 25 seats. That's basically losing more than 50% of their seats.
Yeah, I think it's exactly 50%.
I thought they were on 50, or they're on exactly 50. Anyway, half their seats gone on with only 25 seats. No surprise Labour picking up most of those in Scotland. I mean, it's pretty staggering stuff. But then there was a row. There was a row because of analysis where this, in the Telegraph and, you know, people associated with commissioning the poll, as I understand it, they were pushing this idea that reform was what was chipping away at the Conservatives, or in some significant way, chipping away at the Conservatives. Worth mentioning that you'll have noticed from the rundown I just gave, the Reform do not get a single seat per this analysis. Not one.
No.
But that's not the point, is it?
But that's not the point of Reform. I'm actually writing my newsletter this week about Reform. What they want, what Farage wants, is it the same thing? And if they decide what they want, what would they then do about it? So... I am thinking far more about Reform than I'd really, truly like to. But then so are most of the Tory party, because they are obsessed with their sense that they're losing voters to Reform. Now, if you look at the commentary around that YouGov poll, there are two very different flavours of commentary.
Indeed.
One coming from the people who commissioned the poll, including Telegraph columnist David Frost, whose analysis of the poll was on the front page of the Telegraph.
That's Lord David Frost, chief Brexit negotiator to you.
Frosty Frost, yeah. he's very much pushing the narrative that the Tories have to toughen up the Rwanda bill. That's the only way that they will get all the voters back from Reform. And if they get all the voters back from Reform, we're back in hung parliament territory. The other analysis, incredibly unusually, came from YouGov almost immediately as a response to that analysis saying...
Yes. Forgive me, I'm going to jump in and read exactly what they say. I'm not disputing your characterization, but for fairness, I'm going to read exactly what they said. There's a paragraph on their page called Notes on the Telegraph Analysis, Daily Telegraph's Analysis, which, let's just say, this is a very unusual thing to happen anyway for a polling company. But the comment says, the Daily Telegraph wrote that, quote, in constituencies across England and Wales, the Labour vote is up by an average of just 4% compared to 2019. That's the end of the quote. And then the YouGov continue, this is somewhat of a red herring. There is a sum using certain national results whereby the estimated Labour share looks like a mean of 4 points rise on their 2019 performance. However, this is not the correct way to look at either implied national changes nor what is happening at the constituency level. If we aggregate up all our constituency level figures and then weight them according to likely voter population, the headline vote intentions figures come out reading out at the following. Labour 39.5%, Conservatives 26%, Lib Dems 12.5%, Reform 9%, Greens 7.5%, SNP 3%, Plaid 0.5%, Others 2%. There's now, a lot more. I'm not going to keep reading more.
It's also worth noting, and I don't know when it was decided and why they did this. I'm just trying to look at data from the 16th. When did that article come out?
Which one? The Telegraph?
When did the first Telegraph story drop?
Well, all the stories up look to be for... There's a Gordon Rayner story, Tories facing 1997 general election wipeout from the 14th.
So the correction also went up on the 14th. On the 16th to the 17th of YouGov, they put a poll in the field, which they released very quickly on the 18th. I've known YouGov to take a lot longer than that to get turn a poll around, at which the headline voting intentions are now... Hold on to your hats here, Charlotte.
Go on.
I had to say this without giggling. Tories are on 20%.
Oh, yes, I saw this. 48 for Labour.
Labour on 47. Don't overestimate the Labour share there. and then you've got Lib Dems on 8, Greens on 7, Reform on 12.
So a little bit of a bump.
So I think YouGov were quite clear that they wanted to counter the narrative that had been set up. Yeah, their poll was perfectly fine.
MRP
was very respected. In 2017 that we won Canterbury, or was it 2015? I'm trying to remember. I remember, because I have a friend who works at YouGov, and they did their first MRP. And there were seats predicted to win that had never gone Labour. Mm-hmm. One of them was Canterbury, a seat I have a particular interest in. It's where I voted in a general election for the first time. And so I texted my friend and said, Canterbury? And he's like, yeah, things are changing. You know, demographic shift, Europe, these things matter. And they were right, and they were widely ridiculed. That first MRP poll was widely ridiculed, I think part because it came out in 2017 when everyone was like, oh, Labour's going to do disastrously, Theresa May will have a million-seat majority, blah, blah, blah. YouGov's polling showed something that really didn't fit that narrative. So everyone went, oh, you're so silly. And then YouGov reported largely right.
Pretty right, yeah. Let's dive into this current one because there's a few more bits to point out. Because basically there's some very big names that are really under threat or probably, you know, could lose the seat per this poll. Let's start with Jeremy Hunt. His Surrey constituency, Godalming and
sure
Ash.
I'm sure every broadcast journalist in the country would be quite pleased not to have to say Jeremy Hunt anymore, just in case
I spoke very slowly whilst doing that. his seat, the Chancellor's seat, is set to be won by the Liberal Democrats per the YouGov model. Leader of the House of Commons, Penny Mordaunt, will lose her Portsmouth North constituency. Welsh Secretary David T.C. Davis, Monmouthshire's gone. Attorney General Victoria Prentice in Banbury's gone. Veterans Minister Johnny Mercer in Plymouth Moorview is gone. And this brings us to the next people we want to talk about. Because Lee Anderson, Deputy Chairman, or was Deputy Chairman of the Conservative Party, will lose the Ashford seat he took from Gloria, replaced it Gordia De Piero. Boris Johnson, the Uxbridge constituency, obviously he's not there anymore, but that constituency would also go to Labour. These are big, big moments. I mean, you want to talk about a Portillo moment. Losing Jeremy Hunt's seat, is a Portillo moment, right?
You know, the one that it just gives me tingles, real tingles. Well, in Hatfield, we could get rid of Grant Shapps or whatever he's called today.
Grant Shapps is under threat. Yeah, I mean, these are serious, serious, you know, people who have been at the top of the Conservative Party for a long time who now found their seats really under threat. So this poll I find really fascinating. Look, we're going to get loads of these as time comes in. Some of them might shift a little bit, but as we've said before, and, you know, some of them will be much more... We don't really know what this Conservative Britain alliance is. We don't know quite what they wanted. Well, we sort of do know what they wanted from this poll. They wanted to prove that the Conservatives should be more like Reform and take that kind of tact. YouGov isn't agreeing with that analysis, as we've explained. But anyway, we're seeing that. We'll obviously see a whole hosting, as I say, of polls as we head towards the general election. But you and I have been doing this show for over a year. And basically, the polls have not shifted from a very, very significant Labour win. And this is the first one where we've got a real sense of the seats. But that kind of 20-ish points gap has basically been pretty stubborn. Sometimes it's dropped to 17, 18. In the poll you outlined, it's a bit higher.
I mean, I'm not crazy. I know that's an outlier. Labour is not going to have a 27-point lead when it comes to the election.
Not on general election day, but the point... No, of course that's true. But the point is...
I mean, I think that would leave the Tories with something like 41.
I mean, that's just not going to happen on an election day. But what...
It's so hard to talk about this without giggling.
But what is clear is that the polls are not closing in any way that the Conservatives need. You know, they haven't gone 20 to 15 to 10. You know, even if that is a slight outlier, it isn't an outlier by enough that it's rubbish.
And this time last year, with Rishi Sunak having been in the job for a few months, you know, things slightly settling down from the trust to fuck, all of the Tory commentary was he can close the gap. And I actually did run the numbers and look at where the Tory polling had dropped. And
never say Emma doesn't know how to have fun.
I was doing it for a speech I was giving, actually. I often do data analysis.
Don't ever let it be said that Emma doesn't know how to have fun.
But... it just wasn't the case that he was narrowing the gap. And there was no evidence. It was just wishful thinking. And I was like, well, okay, it is just wishful thinking. Fine. Let's keep looking because it's only been a few months. But there were two ways it could go. Either Rishi Sunak could bring the Tories up to his level, because he was at that point... outpolling.
I think he still continues to outpoll the party slightly.
Only just.
Yeah, but, slightly.
At that point, it was significant.
Yes.
Or the opposite can happen and the Tories can bring Rishi Sunak down to their level. And that's clearly what's happened.
Yes.
And both of them are now spiralling.
Yes. Yes, that is. Yeah. And as we've analysed in various different ways, whatever Rishi Sunak does now, it doesn't seem to shift the dial that much in his favour. Which brings us to the Rwanda bill. As you say, this poll was commissioned on the day the second reading came out this week when amendments were going through when the third reading was happening. And that caused a great big row as well in the Conservative Party. You will be shocked to learn.
Well, it didn't, Charlotte. It caused a great big row, but it was all set up a tiny show kind of thing. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do know what you mean. And I think in some ways that's the worst outcome of all for the party.
Mm.
So there were various rebellions. 60 Conservative MPs voted in favour of changes to the bill, which one of them included Clause 10 that Bill Cash had put forward. And basically that was meant to say that international law could not be used to prevent or delay a person being sent to Rwanda. That was six. And some of those that were in this rebellion include Lee Anderson and Brendan Clark-Smith, who were both deputy chairs of the party. They were quote-unquote Red Rule MPs. We talked about Lee Anderson just in the last segment. So, and there was also a PPS, a Parliamentary Private Secretary, Jane Stevenson. She voted against the whip and is therefore no longer Kerry Badenoch's Parliamentary Private Secretary. I think, you know, that sometimes happens with the PPS. It's not great, but it's not apocalyptic. Those two deputy chairmen, including, you know, particularly Lee Anderson, who's become, but rightly or wrongly, depending on your interpretation of things, very high profile, is, you know, quite significant losses. Now, I suspect Lee Anderson is quite happy to resign and have much more fun presenting on GB News than he is having to try and muster the Conservative
Party.
Well,
he never had to choose between the two before.
But he never had to choose between the two before. That's a fair point. But he, you know, now doesn't have to muster the Tory troops as well. He went on GB News, Lee Anderson, to say, "I don't think I could carry on in my role when I fundamentally disagree with the bill. I can't be in a position to vote for something I don't believe in." So that was Tuesday.
That was the first thing he said.
Indeed. That was Tuesday. Let's jump to Wednesday. And the bill passes 320 to 267 votes in the House of Commons. So, and only 11 Conservative MPs voted against it in the end. So a decent...
And who was that? Was one of those Lee Anderson? Obviously, given the levels of passion that he brought to it, clearly yeah. He would have gone into that lobby to vote against.
Mm. There was a lot of people who changed their opinion overnight, Tuesday to Wednesday, weren't there?
Well, as I understand it, I don't think that is when he changed his mind.
Right. Well, it ended up basically with a win for Rishi Sunak. But
yeah,
this is what...
Come on, let's talk about what happened with Lee Anderson. So Lee Anderson said that he was in the no lobby, so doing what he'd publicly stated he was going to do, and voting against legislation he doesn't think will work. And people were a little bit mean to him. They were sniggling, which I think he means either niggling or sniggering.
Or, I mean, I think you can sniggle. I've sniggled at people.
I mean, maybe it's a new thing. I mean, I don't know what Riz is.
You
so
and I
will
discuss
am I to
that
talk?
Off air. You and I have both been around Westminster enough to know that people could probably sniggle there. I can see a sniggle. Anyway.
So he, and then because he's the world's thinnest skinned man, he didn't stay in the no lobby, ran off and abstained.
Which is a very honourable way to represent your constituents.
I mean, I have to admire the courage of his convictions because yeah, they clearly stood up to people having a little laugh at his expense. Now, if Lee Anderson is not used to people having a little laugh at his expense by now, I'm really quite surprised.
I would also say that, look, politics is a full contact sport, right? And there are some... I'm trying to be serious, and I can't really be serious in defence of Lee Anderson. I'm not going to be. But what I can be serious of is... and I don't think it applies in this instance, just because I'm never going to think voting for this Rwanda bill is a good thing. But voting against your party on certain issues is a very big deal.
It absolutely is. No, I don't deny that for a second. What I'm saying is once you've made that decision, in public, then see it through, because otherwise you're trying to either get the best of both worlds and ending up with the worst of both worlds.
So, and what I was going to say is it's very hard to vote against your party. And that moment, because of the way politicians have to vote, i.e. literally walking through a door with other people, and if though on a census of rebellion, those people are your quote unquote opponents, that's a very big thing to do. And, you know, in some instances, people are looked after and encouraged on set, depending on what those issues are. But it's a difficult thing to do. And so I think, look, we don't want to, and therefore I understand, like, it is a cultural thing to do that. I think it's just because of how I feel about this legislation that I just have no sympathy for him in this particular instance, because I think...
No, I think even if I agreed with the legislation and he behaved in the way that he's behaved, I would think, like, let's say he was on my side, right, of a particular argument,
and he behaved the joke like is technically that. Technically, he is on our side of this because he voted against
it. Well, technically,
that.
Yeah.
Not for the reasons you and I have.
But I would be embarrassed by his behaviour. Mm. I would say, you are not making my side look like the good guys right now. You're not making us look organised and sensible.
We should point out.
You know, I am frequently more critical of people I agree with who do stupid things than I am of people I disagree with who do stupid things, because the people who I agree with are letting me down.
We should. Yeah, it's an interesting point. And yeah. This is obviously going to continue. And obviously, why we link this to the poll is, of course, some Conservatives think the only thing that matters to turn around the poll is
getting a flight in the air to Rwanda.
And I just don't buy that. I'm sorry, I just don't. No.
I mean, it's the third tier issue, so it's not like it's not important. I'm not going to pretend that people in the country
don't care
about it and are all woolly liberals who are... But in terms of... like the things that people are going to go out and vote on. Some will vote on immigration, but far, far, far more are going to vote on cost of living, the economy, the mood of the country, time for a change.
And of course, the NHS.
And the NHS. So, you know, you are not going to turn around this big a gap with fanning around on the edges of illegal immigration policy. Because actually, you know, they're conflating a lot of things, because when people say migration, an awful lot of the problem is the very high numbers of legal immigration.
Which is about the only thing keeping parts of the economy going, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you and I are on the same page on that. Don't you know, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm saying that's what voters are telling pollsters.
They wouldn't. We would. You want to see what the economy is like without some of those people that then look at the polling.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. These things do turn on a dime.
No, what I'm saying is, people would be even more. The polling would be even more detrimental if, because of the state of the economy, if we didn't have those level.
Yeah, and I suspect that eventually, when there weren't enough people working in care homes or delivering your Deliveroo. Or whatever it is that's going to impact your life on a day-to-day basis, people might suddenly change their mind quite quick, sharp, mm-hmm. If we suddenly become Japan.
I mean, there's lots of lovely things about Japan, but our immigration is rather different.
Yes.
And our ethnic makeup.
But our demographics are not.
Yeah.
In terms of our aging society and our birth rate.
No, you're quite right. Yeah, another big ticket. Actually, no, I'm not going to do that. I was going to do a whole speech about how we don't deal with big ticket issues because we're fussing around with things like this. But anyway, we'll deal with that another time, because we have to turn to the House of Lords.
Yes, well, so does the bill.
Well, quite. And this is going to be what they call ping pong. It's going to go back and forth a lot of times. Lord Carlisle, who obviously was an independent terror, I don't know what he was.
I need to find a word very quickly.
He was an independent reviewer of terrorism legislation. I think that's the better word.
I mean, I've met some toddlers that I would definitely call an independent terror.
Indeed. He used he described this Rwanda legislation as a step towards totalitarianism. So that's a good step as you head into the House of Lords. He said it's illegitimate interference by politics with the law on the Today programme. So it's a very good start. There is obviously going to be an almighty standoff between the Lords and the Commons, and we are already seeing language and rhetoric that basically is, I mean, you texted me calling it, oh, the House of Lords are quote unquote enemies of the people, was your sort of assessment of it. And I understand why you got there, because the rhetoric is ramping up, the sort of legitimate commons take, you know, being defied by the Lords, which, by the way, the people that want to keep the House of Lords are saying this. I find this whole thing ironic, right? Because the people that, like you and I, who want to get rid of the House of Lords, when stuff like this happens, we're like cheering on the Lords.
I mean, the Lords have done a lot of good stuff in recent years that I agree with. I just don't agree with the philosophical concept.
No, and the Conservatives who never really wanted to get rid of, or never been bothered about getting rid of the Lords, are attacking the House of Lords and saying they're the legitimate because they're elected. I mean, it's a mess. And yeah, the House of Lords, of course, is a house of scrutiny. That's the point of it. It can't set the political agenda, but it can scrutinise legislation, and that's clearly what's going to happen. You're going to have some very eminent people going through this stuff line by line, and I think there's about to be an almighty row.
I may be wrong.
Surely not.
But it's so rare. Indeed. But yeah, it does happen. I don't think Rwanda was in the 2019 manifesto, because I think Rwanda was a last ditch part of the attempt to save Boris Johnson.
I mean, I don't remember this being a discussion point at all.
But the reason I say that is that one of the conventions of the Lords is that they would never stop a manifesto commitment because it's been democratically put through, but they feel that they have a lot more leeway if something isn't in a manifesto.
Very good point. It's a very good point. And yes, you're absolutely right. That's a very, very good point. I will perhaps, probably not, go through the Conservative 29 manifesto.
Well, if you can get it online, just do search a for Rwanda, control.
Yes. And I suspect I would not find the word Rwanda in there. There will obviously be stuff about toughening up immigration and illegal immigration.
Yes.
But look, you and I covered the 2019 election. I did not hear any references to the small boats, stop the boats. We certainly didn't hear discussion that they would look to do. We didn't even hear discussion, if I remember, about sending immigration, illegal immigration, to a third country, even if they didn't specify the country. I don't remember that at all.
And can I just make another point on third country? They keep saying, oh, look, Germany are doing third country, yep. Other European countries are doing third country. They're doing it for processing. And when the people are processed, if their asylum claims are accepted, they are allowed to live in Germany. The whole point of the Rwanda scheme is that nobody who is sent to Rwanda, whether their asylum claim is accepted or not, will be allowed to come back to the UK. That's a very, very different thing.
It certainly
thing.
Is. I found a bit of a row from back in 2022 about this in the manifesto. So the SNP, this is a piece in the National, so you can take it with the salt that's required.
Yeah, lots
but
of salt.
The SNP at the time said that this is the manifesto pledge, continue to grant asylum support to refugees if fleeing persecution with the ultimate aim of helping them to return home if it is safe to do so. That doesn't sound like sending people to Rwanda.
It does not sound like a description of Rwanda in any known universe.
Stuart McDonald was the SNP's Home Affairs spokesman and said the 2019 Tory manifesto contained a commitment to protecting refugees and granting asylum to those facing persecution and oppression. It made no mention of offshoring or offloading responsibility onto developing countries to which they have absolutely no connection. Again, in the National, it's the SNP, take it with the salt required. But that's obviously a direct quote from this Conservative manifesto.
Yeah, and I think this is important because It will affect the behaviour of the Lords. I don't think it will ultimately change the outcome of the vote.
You think this will still get through?
It'll still get through. Once it got through second reading, it was always going to get through, if I'm honest. But I do think that the Lords will try to change it significantly. And then it's up to whether Rishi Sunak wants to take the time to send it back or whether he just wants to get whatever he can get past.
Yeah, and I think, again, this is the classic position that Sunak has found himself in since he became Prime Minister, that basically whatever he does is not going to be good enough for some people.
Can I say that while there are significant human rights questions to be asked about Rwanda, and I believe we've actually taken asylum seekers in from Rwanda, Paul Kagame is rather enjoying his moment. He's just offered to give us the money back.
Yeah, and obviously we had that incident where he was, saying that they won't do anything that's not in keeping with international law. It's all become a total mess.
But Charlotte, do you know the name of the capital city of Rwanda?
Wait, do I? Go on. No, I don't.
Have you not seen the Teresa Coffey clip?
Oh, no, I'm not dealing with this. No, no.
Teresa Coffey, basically, Yvette Cooper, in what is a perfectly standard shorthand, referred to it as the Kigali government, which is where the seat of government is in the capital city
Indeed.
Of Rwanda.
And she thought, oh, there was a mix-up between Kagame and Kigali.
No, she just got confused and said, why do you keep calling it Kigali? It's Rwanda. And there's this brilliant moment where Yvette Cooper and Stephen Kinnock catch each other's eye in response to this and are trying so hard not to corpse. Honestly, you've got to watch it. It's about 30 seconds long and it will make your day.
Well, I'm going to read you a tweet from Curry's Coffee that I think will make your day. Of course, Kigali is the capital city of Rwanda. The Kigali Amendment to the Montreal Protocol is one of the most important agreements to strive towards net zero, focusing on the phase down of HFCs. It is a key part of keeping 1.5 alive.
Yes, I would like to read my quote tweet of that.
No, no.
When you're explaining, you're losing. Particularly when you're explaining that actually you're not an idiot, when clearly you are an idiot.
Not a good moment at all. Yeah, I kind of think actually, if you've got yourself in that kind of mess,
just shut up. Keep your head down for a few days. Don't tweet. No, honestly, I do know where Rwanda is.
No, I'm talking about the moment in the House of Commons.
Yeah, but this is it. She was responding on Twitter to that moment in the House of
Commons. No, I know, but she shouldn't have got it. What she should have done in the House of Commons is not said anything, go along with it, keep talking about Rwanda using the phrases she wants, and take your mobile phone out quietly under the dispatch box and look up the word Kigali if you're getting confused. I mean, for goodness sake.
Well, I think it's worse than that, Charlotte. She wasn't confused. She was trying to say that Yvette Cooper was confused.
Yes, don't get involved in the row.
And it was like, no, she's not.
Roll with it. Ask your PPS what's going on. Do anything but start that row on... Oh, dear, not good. Anyway.
She was our Deputy Prime Minister.
Yeah, for about 3 minutes. Let's wrap up there because it's all a bit much for me. Emma, where can people keep up with you?
You can read the Substack I referred to earlier. At Hard Thinking on the Soft Left on Substack. And I'm on all the social media platforms as Emma Burnell _.
Wonderful. I'm at Charlotte A. Henry across social media. Head over to theaddition.net for blog posts on tech and media. You can also sign up to my newsletter, The Addition, over there, extra podcast there, etc., etc. Then, of course, we would love you to head over to patreon.com/houseofcommentspodcast because you can, for £5 a month, support us and help us keep this show going because it's a lot of work. It may not sound like it, but I promise you, trust me, we do try. And we would love your support there. For that, you will get access to both the paid versions of Emma and my newsletter, which if you bought them separately would be £100, but you can get them both for about £60 for the year, which we really appreciate. And we're going to start uploading some audio content. Once we've got a nice little audience there, we'll give you bit of extra audio content as well. We'll probably do some after PMQ stuff. We'll see what we're up to, but it will be good fun over there. So please do head over there and help support the show, because we really means a lot. So with all that said, goodness knows what we'll be discussing next week, but we'll see you then.